Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello there, Greg Haynes with you, and welcome to episode number 81 of the Full Throttle podcast from Eurosport. It's all about bike racing, and would you believe it, it's the 1st of June. Feels like hardly anything's happened this year, but it is indeed Monday, the 1st of June, and this is Full Throttle. Now, I'd like to start with a few thank yous for the pictures you sent in. After our previous episode last week, I was saying send us some pictures if you can of where you listen to the podcast from, but it seems like dog walking and podcast listening are two popular things to combine. Quite a few of you seem to be walking your dogs while listening to the podcast, but Simon Petty was one of those who did that, sent us a good picture, so thanks for that, Simon, sending that one into Greg Haynes TV and Eurosport_UK. Although I think actually my favorite was the very first one we had from Cliff Price. Hi, Cliff. Sent us a picture of himself listening to the podcast on his phone while he is, in his words, stuck, in inverted commas, in the Ban Na Resort in Nakhon Nayok in Thailand. And Cliff tweeted, "What rotten luck being stuck here on holiday for months on end. ... Well, thanks very much to Simon and for Cliff for sending in those pictures of where you listen to the podcast from. As you can hear, the WhatsApp messages are still going on the computer in the background. That's actually Pete Burton, who's the man who, by the time you've listened to this, will have edited the podcast in London and published it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, the Eurosport website. Don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already. But joining us this evening, as it is, as I record this on Sunday night, is Michael Hill. Michael is the World Superbike Paddock Show host, but he's also one of the commentators for Moto America. And would you believe it, we've actually had some live bike racing on Eurosport and the Eurosport player over the weekend. It was round one of Moto America 2020 from Road America in Wisconsin. It's about an hour's drive from the city of Milwaukee in a northerly direction. And crucial stuff, because everybody else in the world of motorcycle racing, motorsport, and probably sport in general will have been watching Moto America to see just how things worked out with the social distancing measures, the fact they were running with no crowd and no spectators, all very much behind closed doors. Michael Hill was in London. He was broadcasting from there, as of course he was unable to get to the States because of the very, very strict travel restrictions still in place. So he's going to bring us all the latest on just how things worked and who to look out for. There's also a bit of chat about World Superbikes towards the end of the show. So it's Michael Brian Hill on this week's Full Throttle. Well, Michael, it's just coming up to 11:30 for me in Barcelona on Sunday night, 10:30 for you, of course, in London. First of all, how's the weekend been? How are you generally? And what's it been like contributing to a live broadcast on a completely different time zone?
Yeah, hi, Greg. Hi to everyone that's listening. I'm still a little bit, it's a bit surreal, to be honest, because I feel like I've lived every single second of the weekend from the very first free practice session. In fact, even on the Thursday when there was videos and interviews going on, I feel like I've been there virtually. It's such a bizarre feeling. But no, racing finished about 45 minutes ago. Cracking weekend, a really, really great weekend. But it has been different. It's been really weird. I've had my my living room in London set up very differently. I've had the laptop on with Moto America Live Plus, which is the online broadcast, which I'm normally hosting for the series, which normally streams 6 to 8 hours a day, all the classes, all the sessions. I've had that running on the laptop. I've had live timing on my normal television, which I've then been alternating with the Eurosport broadcast so that I can sort of comment and give feedback in terms of how that came across. I've had a coffee table full of notes and sort of entry lists and statistics, super folders, or not quite to the Gregory Haynes standard, scattered all over the floor. And I'm now just sat here in my shorts and t-shirt just thinking, wow, what a weekend. And you know, can I just say right from the outset, it's probably going to sound a little bit biased because I'm involved with the championship, but just what a bloody good job everybody involved with Moto America has done this weekend with the eyes of the world, not just in motorsport and motorcycling, but pretty much every sport around the world will have been looking at what was going on at Road America this weekend. And I'm sure you'll agree, Greg, I know you've been watching it on Eurosport and bits and bobs. They pulled it off, you know, yeah. Loads of protocols, but what a bloody good job.
No, I couldn't agree more. And I don't think you are being biased, actually, to be fair with you. I think you're absolutely right because, you know, a fair amount of courage and hours and hours and hours of preparation has gone into this, haven't there? Let's be honest, Michael, so many things could have gone wrong, couldn't they, with this? Whether, you know, somebody was seen on screen not taking the social distancing measures, or whether somebody failed the medical exams or whatever. I mean, and it hasn't gone wrong, has it? It really has gone very smoothly. And you have to feel that Dorna, MSV, and as you've said yourself, many other sporting organisations around the world will have been watching Moto America this weekend to see what they did and how they did it.
Yeah, and it's, you know, credit to Wayne Rainey and to Chuck and all the guys, Larry and John Norton and all the guys from the technical crew. I was involved in a conference call a couple of weeks ago where we actually chatted, you know, me, all the commentators, all the broadcasters, all the cameramen, everybody was involved. There's loads of us on an online call, and the various protocols and procedures that they put in place from our side to make sure that, you know, there was limited interaction with the riders. You will have seen the way that they did the interviews. So, you know, of course, there's been various comments with people going, oh, well, you don't have as many rider interviews. Of course not. There was no fans. There was no media. You know, everybody had to respect the social distancing rules. So there would be, you know, for example, no grid walks, and the podium did look very, very different. But, you know, I think that they put together a great procedure. Obviously, I'm friendly with quite a lot of the riders, and even from their side, in terms of the way they laid the paddock out. I mean, Road America is a 4-mile circuit. It's a fantastic venue. I went there last year. The paddock is massive. There is so much space that they've got there. You know, there's a lot of space for them to lay things out. And you will have probably seen the eagle-eyed viewers this weekend will have seen that in the past there would have been big hospitality units. Nothing like that was there. All the big campers, nothing like that was there. Very limited in terms of the number of people that could stay in the paddock. There were temperature checks every single time you entered and exited the circuit. Same as the riders. It was shown on TV a couple of times. You know, Cameron Bobier takes off the helmet. He walks through a particular part of the paddock. And it was all segregated to try and keep the different categories separated. So if you were in Superbike, they didn't want you just going up and seeing your buddy that was in the Superstock class, for example. So it was... Yeah. It was a proper procedure and a layout that was put in place. And, you know, a lot of people having to work on it and various temperature checks that happened. I was speaking to Trevor Standish, one of the kids that moved up from the Liqui Moly Junior Cup into the Twins Cup. And there was a process in place even for technical control. So only one person and one nominated person for the weekend could take the bike to technical control, for example. Same with tire stickers. All those kind of things, things that we would take for granted on a normal weekend, whether you're in, you know, as you said, BSB, World Superbike, Italian Championship, all these things you don't think about, but every single thing down to the letter was addressed. And as I said, I think they did a really, really good job. And on top of that, the racing was fantastic. It really, really was. I mean, you mentioned social distancing, and I think it's clear for everybody that watched Cameron Bobier, he clearly adheres to social distancing, doesn't he? I think to the distance it was never seen. So, but no, joking aside, it was a great weekend, and I think real credit to everybody that was involved. And I think it just proves that, you know, with a good bunch of people, and you just mentioned there, you know, a lot of things could have gone wrong. I think also a massive credit and a massive shout out has to go to every single team, every single rider, for respecting the rules, because it's completely away from what they know, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I know it must have been a really weird atmosphere over there in the paddock as well, as you just say. You know, as you just said, a lot of the riders are friends or teammates in some cases with riders in other categories, and you'd want to go and see them, wouldn't you, to see how they got on in their race, to give them advice. They've not been able to do any of that this weekend. It must be quite weird.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I've spoken to quite a lot of them. I did a few Instagram lives with a few of the riders, and even riders within the same teams had to respect the 6 feet rule. So, you know, for example, Cooper McDonald and Dominic Doyle. They ride in Twins and in Junior Cup, respectively, but they're in the same team. So I did an Instagram Live with the pair of them. Dominic took a double win in the Junior Cup, and Cooper McDonald was at top six in race one. I think he finished seventh in race two. But even doing that, they were on opposite sides of the camper. You know, so it was
it was quite weird.
But, you know, you've got to say, I mean, it would be the same for us. I mean, obviously, I wasn't trackside, but on a normal weekend when you're obviously in World Superbike in the paddock with Eurosport and I'm doing the thing on the stage in the paddock show, there's plenty of times over the weekend where our paths will cross. And hey, Greg, hi, Mike, how are you doing? And you will chew the fat in the paddock. None of that was going on. So it must have been really, really bizarre for everybody involved.
I try and social distance from you under the best of circumstances, to be quite honest.
Well, it's nice of you to be honest about that publicly. but no, I mean, joking aside, I mean, it was weird, wasn't it? I mean, it was a weird situation. And also when the camera was panning around and you could see empty grandstands, you know.
Yeah.
You know, okay, you're maybe not going to get 100,000 fans turning up at Road America, but you still would get a fair few thousand people turning up. It would be busy. The grass banks would be full of people. They were last year, with people having picnics, and the big banners would be up representing whichever team you're supporting. You know, there's lots of other activities, not just at Road America, but at all of the Moto America championships, you know, whether it's Wall of Death and the merchandise area and the hot pit where fans can go and do all of the pit lane walks and things. And there's a go-kart track. So there's various activities scattered all over the circuit. And let's not forget, it's probably the biggest track that Moto America goes to. It's a 4-mile circuit. So there's plenty of space there. And it did look a little bit sparse. But the good news is that they're going back there in a month's time for round two, and fans will be allowed. The state of Wisconsin has said fans are allowed for round two. So that is great news.
Yeah, I think what's becoming extremely apparent now, of course, for motorcycle racing and motorsport, and really, as you've said, sport worldwide generally, is travel restrictions, isn't it? Because Moto America has now proven that if you got pretty much all your people involved — they weren't all there, but pretty much everyone involved in that championship is based in the States — you have to feel the British Superbike Championship will have an advantage over World Championships later in the year, as most of the people are already in one country. And of course, all of the races are in the same country. But Michael, for anyone who's listening who perhaps doesn't know Moto America quite so well, you've been bringing me up to speed with the different categories. There's five, of course: Superbike, Supersport, Stock 1000, the Twins, and the Lecky Moly Junior Cup. All very competitive, all very different. First of all, what are the main differences between, let's say, World Superbike and Moto America?
Okay, so I mean, I'm not that technical, but, you know, I hopefully know as much as you about the various technical rules. The biggest thing from anybody looking in is going to be the tyres. Okay, so if we're talking the tyres, you'll see different stickers. They have orange stickers and white stickers on the bike. But the biggest difference is that the Moto America Championship uses Dunlop throughout their categories. Of course, in World Superbike, it's Pirelli. In BSB, it's Pirelli. I think there's a few other manufacturers involved in different classes, but predominantly in Superbike, it's Pirelli as a control tyre. It's not a control tyre in Moto America. It's Dunlop. The biggest difference, obviously, from a tyre perspective, and funnily enough, I was talking to Garrett Gerloff a lot in Australia about this, the Dunlop tyre maybe doesn't have as much initial grip, but the grip that you get on lap one and lap two is not going to be too dissimilar at the end of a race. So you're not going to get the massive degradation, the massive drop-off of tyre. Mm-hmm. Right. Whereas the Pirelli, as Garrett Gerloff said after his first race in Phillip Island, shot off like a scalded cat from the back row of the grid, running in seventh place, thinking, wow, this is great, I've got so much grip. 5-6 laps to go, had nothing left, and his time's dropped off. So that's the biggest difference. And we saw that in the Superbike class this weekend. Bobier starting out, breaking the lap record, and then he was comfortably able to run in the 2-minute 11s. I think the lap record went in race two today, actually, a 2:11.0, which was the fastest ever two-wheel lap at Road America. But he was comfortably able to do 2:11.6, 2:11.7 for the full race. Where if that was a Pirelli tyre, if we base that on what we've seen in World Superbike, those times would have dropped maybe a second, maybe a second and a half, but you would have noticed the drop. In terms of the other major factors, there is no factory team as such. The factory team from last year in Yamaha's case, and for Yoshimura Suzuki, they're no longer there. They've now combined efforts. So the major teams that you see are the M4 X-Star Hammer team, which is run by Chris Ulrich, who's a former racer himself, a very, very renowned journalist as well, roadracingworld.com. They're also massively involved with all of the safety at the circuits. There's a fund that goes on to raise money for all the air fences and things. But they are now the official Suzuki partner in Superbike, Supersport, and in the Twins Cup as well. They're running, last year they were running the official team. I think they've partnered, or they've certainly given bikes to the American racing team for Rocco Landers. But in terms of Superbike and Supersport, they're the main team. And then the Attack team, which was previously running JD Beach and historically before that, Josh Herron, they have now combined efforts with Monster to make up a two-rider team with obviously Cameron Bovier, defending champion, and Jake Gagne, of course, who's back in the championship now with a full factory ride. And Jake did a great job this weekend with two podiums. Every other team there, you know, gets a little bit of help here and there. Obviously, Carl Wieman's Ducati team, not necessarily receiving financial support, but, you know, they're getting bits directly from the factory. There's a couple of Kawasaki's on the grid, where obviously in the World Superbike, you get factory teams. Honda, for example, coming back in, that's a fully fledged factory team with full support from Japan. We're not getting that as much now in Moto America. That's the biggest change. But in terms of electronics, the ECUs, very much the same as World Superbike.
And of course, you've got people doing a bit of both as well, haven't you? People like PJ Jacobson, he's racing in the Superbike class and in Stock 1000, and he's had a pretty good weekend. Of course, we know PJ well, don't we, from his World Supersport days a few years ago.
Yeah, and obviously PJ, a lot of people forget that he is a very, very accomplished big bike rider. He raced a title in the BSB Championship. Yeah. He's runner-up in the World Supersport Championship with a couple of victories, a few years back. He came back to America last year, raced for the Celtic team, the HSBK team, which is the team, I don't know if you were following Moto America, but a few years back, Claudio Corti rode for that team when they ran an Aprilia. So the team's been around a very long time. It's a very, very good team. They're obviously running this Ducati Panigale V4, which is allowed in the stock class. Now, it's not homologated, I don't believe, in BSB, but it is homologated for the super stock class in America. And the thing is a missile. I mean, he's doing nearly 180 mile an hour on a stock bike. He won the race. I won't say it was a comfortable win because there was a great fight in that super stock race, but he did set the new lap record. But comparing lap times, bearing in mind that there's an initiative this year called the Superbike Cup. And what that means is that if you're riding in super stock and you elect that you also will race in the Superbike class, you can race in the Superbike class for free. Obviously, you pay your entry for super stock, but you race the super stock class and you pay your money as you normally would. But then you can actually upgrade your entry and race the Superbike championship as well. You're prevented from riding the two free practice sessions, or qualifying one and qualifying two, as they're known, on the Friday, to limit additional track time and unfair track advantage. So a lot of people were saying yesterday, well, there's only 13 or 14 bikes on the track. Where's PJ? You know, where's Cameron Peterson? Where are these guys? And that is purely a rule put in place for fairness, which I think is a really good rule.
That's interesting.
If you go into these tracks that, you know, you suddenly get an extra hour's worth of track time, it can certainly be a factor. And then obviously you score points based on the overall race as well. And obviously the leading rider at the end of the year will be classed as the Superbike Cup champion. And you get, you know, there's various prize purses and money and points and all that involved as well. And I think it's worked really, really well. And I've got to say a massive shout out for PJ Jacobson. For me, one of the most underestimated talents that is, you know, we've sadly lost in the World Championship. Great rider on a super sport bike, but a very, very accomplished rider. He finished fifth today, just 2 seconds from the podium. Now, okay, no, there was a couple of crashes, but nevertheless, it would have been, even with everybody staying on in that second race, it would have been a very, very comfortable top six in both races. And PJ's, I think, lying fifth or maybe joint sixth in the championship after round one on a super stock bike, pretty remarkable, isn't it? I mean, okay, you know, and that's on a track as well, Greg, that's 4 miles long. So when we get to some of these smaller tracks, you know, when we go to Laguna Seca in October, now that's a date that's been moved because the California government wouldn't, or California state government wouldn't allow a non-spectator event. So they've moved the date quite recently. But imagine when we go to a track like that where you don't need the outright speed. PJ, Cameron Peterson, Ashton Yates, Travis Wieman, some of these guys that are doubling up, they could actually really spring an upset and maybe get an outright podium.
Now, who should we look out for most of this year, Michael? Because Cameron Bovier, who it amazes me when I was checking through his profile earlier, that he's still only 27. The rider from California, who many of you may remember actually did a World Superbike ride. He did two races, if you remember, at Donington in 2016 when Sylvain Ginsoly was injured. But of the five Moto America seasons we've had since it became Moto America in 2015, he's won the championship four times already, hasn't he? And then a dominant weekend this weekend at Road America. He's becoming the shaky burn of Moto America, isn't he?
Yeah, you know, I mean, Cameron is a talent for sure. I've got to admit, I didn't think after free practice one that the gap would be so big. He had more than a 2.3 second advantage after one of the sessions on Friday. And I was making a joke with Robbie Floyd, who I co-host the Live Plus broadcast with. And I said, God, if he goes like this, he'll be back in Chicago before the second place guy even crosses the line. I mean, it was insane. But, you know, we've got to bear in mind that the testing that took place pre-season happened at the Barber Motorsports Park. It was pouring with rain. Then obviously the COVID pandemic hit and has, you know, massively restricted testing. I mean, Jason Aguilar, for example, in the 600 class, hasn't ridden a bike apart from one little test since September at the end of last season. So a lot of these guys in a lot of these classes had no testing. And that is the same for the likes of PJ and these guys coming out. You know, obviously Kyle Wyman's done a little bit of work, a little bit of testing at a circuit called the Indy Motorsports Park, which I think was sponsoring him for this event. And he's been quite fortunate to get some track time. But a lot of these guys haven't had the testing time that they wanted. So I think, you know, Cameron came out of the blocks really quick. He's been on the R1 Yamaha for, well, I think since 2014, I think I'm right in saying, when he first came into the superbike class. So he knows the bike inside out. Yes, it's a different team. Yes, it's an amalgamation of different teams. And you know, maybe they don't have all the parts that they need yet. But he's got a base setting to work from. So it didn't surprise me that he was quick. Others to watch for, Gagne for sure is going to be one to watch. And he proved that double podium. The Suzuki's historically have been quick. It was a weekend to forget for Tony Elias. Chain came off in the first race, looked all at sea, and then slid out of contention in today's second race. Bobby Fong, the reigning champion in Supersport, he's also no stranger to the bigger bikes. He's actually scored a podium in the superbike class on a superstock bike back in 2015, 2016, I think it was, on a Kawasaki. So he can ride the bigger bike. And as I said, the M4 X-Star team, you know, and the Yamaha Attack team, they are the two benchmark teams. So those four riders, 100%, you would be looking at. Kyle Wyman, I've mentioned, on the full sort of superbike spec Ducati. He had a great weekend, top six yesterday, just missed out on the podium by about 0.07 of a second today in a fight with Josh Herrin. So Josh Herrin, big fan favorite, bit of a personality. He's managed to ink a deal with the Shibi or Scheiber BMW team. It was their local race. Now, again, this is not the same spec bike that Tom Sykes and Eugene Laverty are riding. Obviously, I haven't been trackside, so I've not been able to talk to the team to fully understand what is under the, you know, under the fairings. But, you know, that bike to get a podium, first time out for Josh Herrin, that will give that team a massive boost going for the rest of the season. Herrin will be quick. They've also drafted in Jake Lewis, who, of course, rode a Suzuki last year. Not sure he's doing the whole season. He's going to do the next round at Road America. We'll have to wait and see after that. Outside of those riders, then you've got Matthew Schultz on the Westby Racing team. Very unlucky in race two today. I think he would have been in podium contention. He got taken out by Bobby Fong, but a very strong second place yesterday. He knows how to score podiums. So he's going to be quick all year, the South African, former World Supersport rider, of course, as well. And then if we start looking down the list, there's quite a few other riders as well. David Anthony, the Australian, he's lived in the States for a while. He actually rides for a team called the Fly Racing Team, three-rider team, with him, Sam Federico, and the British rider, Bradley Ward, who is, I believe, I'm right in saying, is the nephew of the late Steve Ward, who was a very, very accomplished Isle of Man TT racer. Used to ride an RC30 red and black machine. But so he's one of the two British riders that's in the race. But very interestingly, Greg, I'm not sure if you know this in any other championship, but the Fly Racing Team runs three superbikes, one Kawasaki, one Yamaha, and one Suzuki. Really? All in the same colours, but three different manufacturers.
That's amazing. That's almost unheard of, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, this is obviously going out on Eurosport, so we should give a massive shout out to Max Flinders. who is another British guy, rides for a team called Thrashed Bike Racing. What a brilliant name for a team. Yeah.
The only thing you do not want to do is thrash your bike, surely.
Absolutely. But it's a canary yellow bike. So it always makes me think of Ed Rendell on the racing 125 and Moto3.
That's what bike. I call a commentator's dream, a canary yellow bike.
Canary yellow. Fantastic. He has a new bike for this year. He got a top 10 today. He finished ninth today. In race two, he's not on the new or the full spec new bike that he was hoping to have ready for the season. Again, lack of testing and things not coming through in time. So he will be very, very happy. So again, I know there's a lot of people that have never watched Moto America before, never seen it before. You know, yes, it's a different championship. It looks very different. The tracks are very different. The whole style of racing there is very, very different, but it's a great championship. And there are British riders out there, for people to get involved with. Someone else to mention, I should probably mention Ashton Yates. He's riding the only Honda on the grid, and he is the son of Aaron Yates, former front runner in the AMA Championship and former teammate to Jeff May when EBR raced in World Superbike. He is the son of Aaron Yates Ashton, and he's actually scored podiums in a few championships in Super Sport, in Super Stock 1000 and the Junior Cup. And he scored 14th place today on the 2019 Honda, because yet again, the 2018 spec bike, what year are we in, Greg?
It feels like we're still in 19, doesn't it? But we're halfway through 20, unbelievably.
Yeah. Sorry, I was going to say the jet lag's kicking in. It feels like jet lag. I've been up so long all day. Yeah, but yeah, no, he's on the 2019 Honda because the 2020 bike hasn't come through yet. So I think for him to score his first superbike championship points on the Honda, in 14th place today is great. And six manufacturers, Greg, in the championship. All six manufacturers scored points across
the
weekend.
That is good.
Really good, isn't it?
Yeah, that's really good. You need that diversity, don't you, in any series? There's no good having utter domination. Is no good for any series or any sport, is it, really?
No, I think it's great. And I think, you know, if you look across all five classes, there were actually five different manufacturers to win races. So absolutely superb. And then obviously, as you said, there's five classes. So you've got the Superbike class, you've got the Superstock class, which was the only event or the only class this weekend that didn't have a double header. So at every race in Moto America, the Superbikes, the Supersports and the Junior Cups, they always get two races. The Twins Cup and the Superstocks, they alternate. So in one race, the Superstocks will get two and the Junior Cups one and vice versa. But interestingly today and yesterday, in terms of all the races that had double races, we saw outright circuit records with the exception of the Supersport class. And the Supersport lap record, funnily enough, goes back to a certain Garrett Gerloff in 2017. So they haven't gone any quicker. But in all of those classes, with the exception of Superstock, we saw double wins. And I've been racking my brains, and very quickly before we started this, to work this out. I think that's the first time in certainly 3 years that we've had double wins in those classes in the first round of the championship. But that's not the true story of the championship, because we saw five photo finishes. We saw 10 riders separated by half a second in the last Junior Cup race before I came to record this. So it looks on paper, it's the same result. Not at all. We saw some brilliant racing this weekend.
Yeah, that just goes to show, looking at the results alone does not tell half the story, does it? Quickly before we go, Michael, let's talk about the two riders in particular I'd like to discuss in this particular show about who are competing in Supersport. One of them is Brandon Pash, who's a name we know very well, of course, from the British Superbike paddock. We'll come to Brandon in a minute. But first of all, let's have a quick chat about Sean Dillon Kelly. Now, he's a guy you know well. I'm yet to meet SDK. He's 18, isn't he? He's from Florida. And he is just the kind of guy who I can see Dorna really wanting in the MotoGP paddock in the next few years. He's an American. He speaks fluent English, obviously, fluent Spanish. He's a good-looking guy. He's very marketable. He's still only 18. He did a wild card, didn't he, in Valencia in Moto2 at the end of last year. That's the kind of guy you feel is going places. I remember when Ben Spies joined us in the Eurosport commentary box in Portimao last September, he was one of the guys, Sean Dillon Kelly, that Ben Spies said, watch out for him. He's going places.
No, you know what? I've got to say, firstly, glad that he's okay, because he went down big in the first race yesterday. Yeah. Really big hit. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. And when I was watching that, I was obviously during the live broadcast with Live Plus, backwards and forwards on WhatsApp with Robbie Floyd and Roger Lee Hayden, who was co-commentating this weekend. And I said, man, that was a big hit. But he got up and he was fine. But, you know, to take your point, He did do a wild card last year at Valencia for the American Racing Team. And the American Racing Team have enlisted this year the services of John Hopkins as a rider coach. And we saw what a great job and a great team that has now become with Joe Roberts, himself a former podium man and front runner in Moto America himself. Finished fourth, I think, didn't he, in the Qatar?
Yeah, and he got from pole position as well, wasn't
it? From pole position, yeah. First American for years to be on pole. So I know that that SDK, as he is known, is very much under that wing. He's a great guy. He really, really is a great, as you said, very marketable, very personable, you know, really good with the fans. He's liked by everybody in the paddock. The team absolutely love him. Naturally talented. He will be one to watch this season. And, you know, as John Hopkins has said, you know, the plan and the aim is to try and bring people through. And this is something that Wayne Rainey and Chuck Axeland, who are sort of the masterminds and the people behind Moto America, you know, from 2015, the AMA Superbike Championship was taken over by the new name, or became Moto America. And the whole purpose of this championship now, you know, as it always has been, but it's trying to revive and bring young American riders through. So this American Racing Team, they're also helping Rocco Landers, who's a 15-year-old kid. He was a sensation last year in the Junior Cup. He's now obviously stepped up into twins as well. So there's quite a few riders, not just SDK, that the American Racing Team have got their eyes on. Brandon Pash would probably be one as well. And, you know, he had a great weekend as well. He did a debut in Supersport last year at Road America, the first event that I was working in that championship. And he got a couple of top sixes. He's on the bike or on the team that PJ Jacobson rode with last year. He only met his crew chief on Thursday night.
Really?
Went and gets it on the podium twice.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, he's definitely going blazes. Maybe he's a favourite for the title this year then. Brandon Pash, he's also with the Celtic Racing Team, isn't he, Michael? Barry Gilsonen's team, who, of course, way back in the day, ran Chas Davis in AMA Superbike, and AMA Supersport, actually, as it was. But Brandon, a pretty good weekend for him as well.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, I think maybe I wasn't clear. So Brandon is actually riding for Celtics. SDK is riding for the M4X Star team. He's riding the Suzuki team. But Brandon had a great weekend. He got two second places. He sits second in the championship behind Richie Escalante, who I do have to just point out, first Kawasaki win in Supersport since Leandro Mercado, I believe. That could be wrong, but I do believe. And certainly since Moto America, or since AMA became Moto America, No Kawasaki has won in Supersport for the last 5 years. Richie Escalante got the double. And he was made to work hard by Brandon Pash today. Brandon, of course, he's the reigning Motorstar champion, isn't he? I think in BSB.
Yeah, he is.
Right.
Yeah.
Great kid, great talent. And I don't know if it's sort of out there for the British fans, but I do believe that Brandon will not be coming back to the UK. I understand that he has signed now with that team and he'll remain in America with that team for the whole season.
Is that off the back of the whole COVID chaos, I suppose?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, he did say that on one of the interviews that was broadcast on Live Plus. I'm not sure exactly what was shown on Eurosport. I was watching both, but, you know, focusing on the Live Plus broadcast, but Brandon did say the plan is for him to stay and contest that whole championship. Now, whether that means he won't be back in Britain this year, but he did say it was because of everything that's going on. The Moto America Championship is running. That gives him a chance to be on a bike. And you can't blame him for that, can you? I mean,
no,
I know he had
no
big aspirations to be back in BSB, and I'm sure he will in the future. But, you know, if you're that young and you've got a chance to race competitively and still get your name out there, you're going to take it.
Oh, yeah, and another very, very naturally talented guy, isn't he? And again, SDK, Sean Dillon Kelly's 18, Brandon Pash, I'm just checking, he's still only 19. It feels like these guys have been around for years, doesn't it? But he's still only 19, is Brandon Pash. So let's watch out for Brandon, who, of course, is from Freehold, New Jersey, over the next few years as well. Michael, the Moto America calendar, you've hinted already that they'll be back at Road America in a month from now, but with fans. Laguna Seca, hopefully, at the end of the year. But there's a new venue on the calendar as well this year, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, just two things. Definitely about the calendar. We are going to be going to Pit Race in Pittsburgh. We're going to be going to Road Atlanta. We'll be going to Alabama, Barber Motorsports Park. But the one that everyone's talking about, and I cannot wait, the Ridge Motorsport Park in Washington.
Mm.
Obviously, I've only ever seen little clips on YouTube. Looks very, very undulating. Big, wide spaces. Nobody's ever been there before. This is a circuit that wants Moto America. You know, there was a few interviews that were played again on Live Plus. They are really, really digging the fact that, you know, the first big motorcycle event that's going to be there is for Moto America. And also, not just that, Greg, we are going back to the Brickyard. Indianapolis will host Moto America for the first time in a few years, and that is going to be exciting as well. But I think it's, you know, there's so much to look forward to. If you've only experienced Moto America this year for the first time, as I said, I'd followed it before getting involved. Being involved last year, there's so many other things going on, so many fan interactions, fan activities at every single event. But another new initiative that I do just very quickly, Greg, want to mention, if you don't mind, is the Ovale Cup. So this is a new initiative. It will run over three rounds. The first round will be at Road America at the end of June when we go back there. And these are on these little Ovale machines, which are great bikes. I actually rode one the day after the Qatar Grand Prix in Qatar. Great little bikes. And this is a three-round championship. There's two models of bike, and there'll be some real young kids, 6, 7, 8 years of age, racing these on the go-kart circuits at a couple of the tracks.
Oh, that's interesting.
So the Road America go-karting circuit will host round one. Pit Race will host a round later in the year. And they're going to broadcast this as well. They're going to film it. They're going to, you know, I'll be involved with commentary. There'll be podium celebrations. So this is, you know, as you mentioned there, in terms of, you know, Stars of the Future and, you know, Dorna and people like that looking to bring these young Americans through. The initiative that, you know, Moto America is trying to do is to bring people through. And we see it already with riders coming through the Junior Cup. They're going into the Twins Cup. Then they're moving into Supersport. Now we're going even younger, and we're going to get real, real young kids on little Ovales. And I watched a demo race that they did last year in Pit Race. I tell you what, some of these kids, Greg, there's some real talent in the States.
That's great, actually, Michael. I didn't know about that. That's a really interesting idea. So they're going to be doing it on the karting circuits of the respective circuits they go to all around the States, of course, all over the country. I guess that's brilliant as well, because it will allow the fans to really get up close and personal and meet those guys, won't it? And then in years from now, when they become famous and there might be a MotoGP world champion, they'll have a picture with them when they were, what, 10, 11 or 12, however old they are, in this new championship.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's going to be kids even as young as 8.
Really? Wow.
I think there's I mean, again, I haven't really looked into it because the first round isn't until the end of June, so I didn't do a lot of prep for it. But it's a three-round championship. First round is at Road America, and the Avar.
That's great.
There's two different types.
Yeah.
Obviously, one's a little bit faster, but I'm sure that there's one where you've got really, really young kids, maybe even 7 or 8 on these bikes. And they're going to do it properly, you know, proper qualifying practice sessions. And I know last year JD Beach was involved at Pit Race in Pittsburgh International. And on the night, what they did is they put the floodlights on, they put the loudspeakers on. I did the commentary. We did a podium celebration, and the races were maybe 10 laps around the go-kart track, but all the Moto America paddock came across. So you had the likes of, you know, Garrett Gerloff, Cameron Beaubier, Matthew Schultz, Cam Peterson, all just leaning over the wall watching these little kids. It was brilliant. Great initiative.
Sure. So by the time they get to Valentino Rossi's age, those kids, they will already have well over 30 years of motorcycle racing experience. That's incredible.
Yeah, but that's something we've talked about, isn't it? I mean, obviously, we've traveled around the world together when we've worked together previously, and we've said in the past, haven't we? You know, look at Spain, look at Italy. They start so young.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Well, it's part of the culture, isn't it? With the way the weather is in Spain and Italy. You know, we go up and down the coast in Italy, don't we? Rimini, all along there. There's little motorbike and karting and mini moto circuits all over the place, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and obviously we've got little initiatives now in the UK. I know Peter Hickman's involved with Ovale, and I just read somewhere that Michael Laverty is involved with the mini bike championship. You know, so the fact that we've now got this in the States, it's what's needed, and I think it's really great. And I think the fact that, you know, Moto America are going to bring it in to their mainstream kind of championship, that also allows these young kids to, you know, riders that they may be looking up to and watching racing, whether it's the likes of Cam Beaubier or Josh Herring. You know, I mean, Josh Herring, he posted a video on his Instagram of him high-siding one of these Ovales on his Herring compound. And I don't know if you follow Josh Herring on Instagram, go and find it. The video is on there somewhere. But these bikes are proper trick. You know, they're set up and they've got full suspension and everything like that. They're a really, really good bike. And I think the fact, as you said, you know, the fact that the fans are going to be able to get involved, you know, there's so many fan things that do happen in Moto America. And because it's not massively being broadcast worldwide in the past, I think a lot of people aren't aware of that, you know. I remember turning up last year for the first race outside of a World Superbike event. Obviously, Moto America and World Superbike at Laguna always coincided. But when I turned up at Road America, you know, there's all crazy things like Walls of Death and, you know, all these massive different hot dog stands and you know, merchandise stands and all kinds of different things that's going on, and meet and greets and all that kind of stuff, and giveaways. And Wayne Rainey has got this massive T-shirt firing gun, which will take your blooming eyes out if he gets it wrong. But he fires all these T-shirts out of his gun and goes up and down the pit. Like, it's fantastic. It's a really, really good atmosphere. And one of the big things that I noticed in Moto America, which is very, very similar to BSB, it's family friendly. So many families at Pit Race and Road America and Sonoma, where I was last year in California, they were turning up and they were pitching up the RVs. You know, like you see it when we were at World Superbike together, you see all the RVs parked up on the, is it down through Rainy Curve and into the last corner? You see all the motorhomes just adorning the side of the track. And it's got that real family-friendly atmosphere.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't care whether it's Ovalle racing, whether it's Superbike racing, whether it's a club race for trikes. You know, if it's got an engine and there's a motor in it, fantastic. But the fact that you've got such diverse championships, you know, I don't think there's another Twins Cup championship anywhere in the world. You've got the Junior Cups, you've got the Ovales, you've got the Superbikes if you want the, you know, the high-tech bikes, but you've got the fan interaction and this real family feel. It's fantastic, you know, and it races 10 rounds around the world. It's great to be a part of. It's very, very different to what I do in World Superbike, which is obviously on a stage, and this is, you know, kind of like what you're doing, grid walks and being on the other side of the camera. But every fan that I've spoken to in the 5 or 6 rounds that I've done so far of being with them, they absolutely love it, you know, and it's just so great. It reminds me of being a kid, when I was a kid with my dad, and we'd go to Donington Park and we'd sit on the grass bank and we'd be eating an ice cream and I'd have my program out and I'd be doing the little lap charts to see who's in the lead. Do you know what I mean? It's just got that real, really nice atmosphere about it. And, you know, it's going from strength to strength, and I'm just really pleased that Eurosport played it this weekend. You know, I would have much rather have been in the States and been there doing my job, the normal job, rather than sitting in my living room and doing it. But, you know, I'm just so, so happy that they've got such a good response, and people just want to see racing, right? We're all sick of this pandemic. I mean, it is an absolute nightmare. It's terrible what's happened. Of course it is. But, you know, I think everybody deep down wants to get back to some semblance of normal life, whatever normal life is going to be. You know, I don't think life will be quite the same as it was beforehand. I don't think the paddocks will be quite the same as they were beforehand. But, you know, hopefully now we can see a bit of a light at the end of the tunnel, and we're, you know, we're coming out of it, and we've got racing again. And that's the main thing.
Just a quick reminder to those of you listening, perhaps also for the first time, don't forget we have Australian Superbike Championship highlights on Eurosport. As Michael's just said, Moto America all live now on Eurosport and on the Eurosport player, as well as, of course, the Bennetts British Superbike Championship and the World Superbike Championship. You're obviously well involved in World Superbikes as well. You're well involved in Moto America. We did not have a scheduled American round of the World Superbike Championship this year. Laguna Seca has fallen off the calendar. Whether we get a World Superbike season remains to be seen. Touch wood, we will. However, what do you feel genuinely, talking to people in America and people in Moto America and, you know, about the place generally, what do you feel the chances are of World Superbikes getting back to America in, let's say, 2021? Because I'm feeling quite optimistic.
Oh, God, you are putting me on the spot, aren't you? No, obviously, anything that I'm saying is not an official Dorna statement, so I just want to put that out there. I'm not speaking on behalf of Dorna or anything like that. What I can do is obviously answer that in the way that you've asked it, in terms of what do people in America want. American fans are passionate about racing. You've seen it when we've been at Laguna. You know, they love their motorsport. They want a round of World Superbike, you know, for various reasons that we're not fully aware of. We're not going back to Laguna. Obviously, I know there was a lot in the press about the ownership of the circuit, or the ownership of the running at Laguna Seca was all changed. So that was something that was completely out of people's controls. And that's, you know, we've talked about that, you know, previously as well. You know, I don't like getting involved with all these keyboard warriors on Twitter that think they know everything. You know, there's always a reason. But you know what I mean? There's always a reason, isn't there, why something doesn't happen? And, you know, it's very, very easy for people to read between the lines. But if you actually look factually what happened, that, you know, Scramp, which was running WeatherTech Raceway, lost that contract and it went to a new partner. And it just so happened that it happened in the middle of a negotiation for a contract. I mean, that's one of those things. Looking ahead, you know, will we go back to Laguna? I honestly don't know. I would love to go back to Laguna for World Superbike. Of course I would, because it's a great track. Obviously, World Superbikes may not be at Laguna, but Moto America will be in October, as I've said. So if you are in the States and you want to go, or if you've never been and you want to put where the Tech Race were on your bucket list, you can still fly out for Moto America in October. But if it doesn't go to Laguna and we do go back, obviously there are circuits that have historically raced World Superbikes, haven't they, in the past? And there's other circuits that would be certainly up to homologation, whether it's COTA or Indianapolis or Utah or Miller Motorsport, as it was known. It's now called Utah Motorsport Complex. So they've all held World Superbikes in the past. But there's other tracks as well, right? I mean, we've got the Ridge Motorsport Park. I don't know what that's like, what facilities are there. You've got Barber Motorsports Park, which is in Birmingham, Alabama, which by all accounts is a fantastic venue. They've got a corner there called Charlotte's Web. And right on the inside, and right on the inside of the corner, there's this great big statue of a giant spider.
Oh, wow. Oh, that would be great. Yeah. I'd like to see Jonathan Ray and co. going around that one then.
Yeah, and there's and you know, and certainly the Barber Motorsports Park, there's a massive museum there and things like that. So, you know, honest answer, Greg, is I honestly don't know. You know, right now we don't even know, you know, how many races we're going to have, if we're going to have any races at all in any championship. So I'm like you, you know, I want to go racing again. I want to be able to get back and do my job. I want to, you know, be back meeting the fans and watching some great, great racing, especially after such a great start in Australia. You know, it's the, you know, it seems like last year. It just seems forever ago.
It's weird, isn't it?
Australia and having such a great start to the season. You know, so I hope for everybody involved that we do go racing again in the World Championship. I hope also for the BSB fans. You know, I love BSB as well. It's a great championship. So, you know, I think the fact, as I said at the beginning, you know, massive hats off to Moto America for getting racing up and running again. It's been proven that, you know, if you put the measures in place and your staff, your personnel, your riders, your teams, if they all respect to the letter of the law what they can and they can't do, you can run an event. Because, you know, I do know that there were various health and safety people there throughout the weekend. And at any point, if something went wrong, they could have closed the event down within a heartbeat. So I know that there was a team of people there checking that. So as I said, Moto America have proven that it can be done. It is very different, of course, because if we go racing with no fans, that will have a very different feel to it, won't it, naturally? But yeah, I'm sure I speak for everybody that's listening. We want to go racing. We want to see racing. And me, from my point of view, would I like to see World Superbike back in America? Yeah, absolutely. Whether that's at Laguna or not, I don't know. But I'd like to see some of the older tracks or some countries that we haven't been to. You know, there's some great tracks around the world. Let's go back to Hungary or let's go to the Slovakia Ring. I don't know. Spice it up.
Yeah, Japan would be a good one as well. I was also thinking, if you don't get your paddock shows this year, if everything is behind closed doors and perhaps we don't get any commentary at all, maybe you and I could have a chat with someone like Stuart Higgs and go and set up a vending stand at BSB and we could don our hairnets and sell hot dogs and burgers and various beverages and things like that with a sort of commentary twist, as you know, as we hand out the food. That could be a good idea.
As long as there's going to be steak and chips for sale, I'm in.
You never know. We'll have to get on the phone to Stuart and see what he thinks. He'd probably go with it.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, do you know what? My little brain's going. I won't go to sleep now, mate. That's the problem.
And he's gone for the hot dogs, and he's gone for the burger.
He's dropped the fries. He's lost it. He's lost it in between the salt and the vinegar. What is going on?
There is ketchup all over the counter. Anyway, on that bombshell, I guess it's probably time. You can tell it's late, can't you? It's just past midnight for me and just past 11 for you. But yeah,
have you actually done any work today?
Jokes.
That's the question I want to ask.
Have I done any work today?
Yeah,
I have actually. I've been planning for this podcast and been writing some stuff for Motorcycle News. So quick plug for that, actually. Watch out for the newspaper going out on Wednesday.
So you wrote down about five questions and thought, right, Michael will talk for 45 minutes. That's my job done. Tell you what, you're a part-timer, you, aren't you? Tell you, call yourself a professional.
Michael, there's some quality reports going out in this week's MCN. There's an interview. There's two features with Stuart Higgs, actually. There's what else? There's stuff about Moto America. There's some stuff about, actually, there's some interesting quotes from Jim Roeder at Kawasaki in terms of Alex Lowe's having already re-signed and Jonathan Ray yet to re-sign. Now, that is great. You have to think Alex Lowe's Phillip Island really did just spur them into taking up the option on that 1+1 contract there.
Yeah, do you know what? The funniest thing about that is I was talking to Alex when we got back, because Alex was on the same flight as me to Qatar because he was obviously going to watch Sam.
Well, that's bad luck for Alex.
I said to him while we were waiting for our baggage, and actually I said to him, I said, mate, I said, I'm so sorry, I said, but I was doing the commentary with Troy Bayliss in the paddock show, And I asked Troy just outright, you know, before the race started, who's going to win this race? And Troy Bayliss turned around and said, Alex Lowes. And I said, just, and I didn't mean it to come out the way that it came out, but I was like, are you having a laugh? Have you been watching testing? Do you know what I mean? Because I
but he had a couple of crashes, didn't he, Alex? And he didn't really seem like he was on the pace.
Alex knows me well enough to know that I didn't mean it like that, you know, but it was just, it was so, so funny that, you know, as a former world champion, and Troy Bayliss is looking at that going, yeah, for me, he's on rails. He's on rails, you know, especially after obviously in that race when Toprak's bike stopped or ran out of fuel or whatever it was that would happen. Yeah. But what a cracking start to the year for Alex. And I'm so happy for him because, you know, he's worked so, so hard and he goes under the radar a little bit, you know, and, you know, he did have a few crashes. And I think it's really unfair as well because people used to tar him with the British, oh, you're crashing all the time. You know, a lot of the crashes that Alex had used to happen in testing, not necessarily in races.
Well, I think even Alex would admit, though, to be fair, that in the races, he was crashing all the time at one point, wasn't he, in the early days with the Suzuki. But you're right, a lot of them were in testing and not actually in the races.
Yeah, you know, and that's, you know, that's what's the quote that it might have been either James Whittemore or Shakey or someone said previously in a commentary. It might have even been you, Greg.
Oh dear.
You can stop a fast rider from crashing, yes, right? But you can't make a slow rider go fast.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? So I think, you know, and let's not forget, Alex has, you know, still got many, many years to go, right? You know, so the confidence that he's got coming from Australia, you know, what's a big shame for me on the coronavirus thing is how good would it have been to have that race 2 weeks later in Qatar?
Yeah.
You
and I did that video, didn't we, on YouTube in Jerez for pre-season testing. And that's one of the things we were most excited about, wasn't it, this year? The fact the calendar was so different. Qatar after Australia, then Jerez earlier in the year. It would have been cooler. We didn't know what was going to happen. Aragon happening around this. Well, in fact, we would have just had Aragon, wouldn't we, I think, last weekend. And in the end, of course, the whole thing has gone to pot, really, hasn't it, so far?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's crap, isn't it? It really is crap. Everything that we're gearing up for, and obviously we did the test at the beginning of the year, and there was so much excitement. It was just so surreal getting off the plane from Qatar and coming back, and the whole world stopped. But you know what? It's, you know, anyone listening now, you know, I'm not massively into, well, I am into politics, but I don't like airing my political views. But, you know, what I would say is, you know, for anyone that's listening, and this is the only probably most political you're ever going to hear me is, but I think it's important that we say it, right? Because a lot of people are going to listen to this to listen about Moto America and racing. We all want to go racing. You know, everybody's talking now, we can go back to football and horse racing is going to start again and things. You know, like where I live in central London, there's a park right opposite where I live. And there's people having barbecues and in the duck pond and all kinds of stuff. And it's like, you know, we're not out of the woods yet.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I think some people have been taking ridiculous liberties, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, my big concern is that, you know, we've now seen that it is possible to run behind closed doors. I stress again, I don't want to be behind closed doors. I want to go back racing. I want to do my job as you do. And the riders want to go and race bikes and the fans want to be there meeting their heroes and watching the racing. It's only, and I can only say this really from a British perspective, I know you're in Spain and it might be a little bit different, but there are some idiots in this country, right? Absolute lunatics in this country that, you know, whether you agree that the lockdown should be lifted or it shouldn't be lifted, the worst thing that can happen for us as motorsport, motorcycling fans right now, especially for racing in the UK, you know, the amount of people that message me every week, is World Superbike going to still happen in the UK? Is BSB going to still happen? I'm sure you get asked that all the time. Yeah. You know, the answer very simply, if these idiots continue being idiots, is no, it's not going to happen. So all I would say is, and this is the only political thing I'm ever probably going to say.
You are right.
Ever is, you know, just let's not get too carried away with this.
Yeah,
you
stop
know,
messing
if the
around.
First couple of races have to happen behind closed doors. I'd rather be behind closed doors and still working in some remote way or a different kind of way than it all having another spike and we don't go racing at all in 2021.
Yeah, I do completely agree. I was laughing there at the way you said that because it was funny, Michael, let's be honest. But you are right. You are right, because if there is another spike, that's it, isn't it? 2020 will be a complete write-off, and there's some fears it will be anyway. But if there's another spike, we can forget it, can't we?
Yeah, and nobody wants that, you know? I mean, you know, it's obviously easier in some respects to arrange a national championship, as Moto America have. I'm sure, obviously, Stuart Higgs and the guys have got some plans of what they want to do in BSB. But when we start looking at a world championship, you've got to think of the 17, 18, 19 countries, the logistics of getting everybody there. You know, so if people do just go crazy and we start having spikes and these restrictions don't get lifted, then we're not going to be able to run a championship, are we? It's not going to happen.
Well, interestingly, Dominic Raab, I was watching Sky News this morning, Sunday morning. So yesterday, if you're listening as this podcast goes out on Monday, Dominic Raab was saying, you know, we can't just stay in a lockdown forever. So it does feel like we're getting to the point now where they're thinking the government can't keep paying, bailing out all these companies, because eventually either the government's going to run out of money, or if they stop paying these companies, people are going to start going bankrupt. It's going to cause even more of a mess. Funnily enough today, Michael, slightly off topic, I was having a chat with one of my next door neighbours over the fence.
As you do.
As you do. And it really is over keeping distance at the moment, which we were obviously doing. But he worked for a big cruise company and they also have flights. And he said they've just had to get rid of, and I quote, 8,000 people. If you think of all the people that work on the airlines and on the cruise ships and in hotels all around the world. Apparently there's people who are now being employed or already working for hotels, having to go around hundreds and hundreds of empty hotel rooms, testing all the taps just to make sure everything's still working. Because there's going to be a load more problems when we do get back to, in inverted commas, normal. So the least we can do is limit the damage while we are in these circumstances, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, I mean, you touched on it earlier on. It must have been so surreal and weird for everybody involved in Road America this weekend, because everything was different. Foreheads and temperatures being taken every time you go through different sectors of the paddock, you know, not able to have hospitalities, no on-site catering. It's, you know, and, you know, we want to go racing, but it's got to be done correctly. It's got to be done safely. Otherwise, we run the risk of then not having anything in 2021. And that's a nightmare, right? Nobody wants that.
Yeah, we'll just have to see what happens. Of course, there's plenty of talk around at the moment of World Superbike having another six rounds or so. The general belief is we'll have rounds in Spain, the three Spanish venues. Portimao should be in there. Misano, perhaps, maybe Donington towards the end of the year. I have my doubts over Assen, I must be honest, but we'll see. MotoGP, of course, there's still this plan being floated for Jerez in late July, moving into August. Formula One's all up in the air, isn't it? They're talking about Austria, maybe Hungary. Don't know what's going to happen with Silverstone. And BSB, it seems like we are going to get a BSB calendar going out either, I'd say, probably not this week. I think maybe next week or the one after, we'll have to see. But
oh, that's good.
Yeah, which is good, isn't it? And as we've already said, you have to feel BSB, with MSVR running or owning many of those circuits, do have a better chance than most of the international world championships, because the majority of people are already in the country and all the races are in the country. But it's just been a nightmare, hasn't it, Michael, for everyone? And so many people in our industry, ourselves included, are freelance as well. And it's just been a decimation of everything, people's bank accounts especially. But it is a mess, isn't it? It's a real mess. And we need to get back on track as soon as possible, because things are falling apart.
Well, we do, because I was meant to go for a top teeth polish, and that's out of the window now for 2021. So that's stupid. That
with the amount that costs, it's going to take until 2024 before you can go and have that again.
Yeah, just one question. I've got to ask you. I know we're talking; it's going on and on and on, but it always happens when we start chewing the fat, doesn't it? We always just start veering off on different tangents and talking. But I find it quite interesting, and obviously you're closer to the BSB Championship now than I maybe am. There's a lot more categories, of course. It's obviously, you know, five categories in Moto America, but they're running at a circuit this weekend that was, you know, I don't know how many square acres it is, but it's massive. But you know, loads of space for them to space everybody out. Obviously World Superbike has three classes, same with MotoGP, so you would like to think, you know, they can probably stagger and move things around in the circuits we go to. There are some circuits in the BSB Championship that we go to that are, you know, let's see, Cadwell, for example. Yes, it's an MSVR circuit, but if social distancing has to still be applied, you know, will that affect the number of races and categories? I'd like to think not. I hope not.
I don't know. And I'm not going to speculate too much, because I certainly know something Stuart Higgs wants to be very careful about is the sort of information we are putting out there, because obviously 100%. We don't want to mislead anyone. You don't want any cost to be incurred for people thinking, oh, there might be a race weekend coming up and teams start preparing, start spending, and then there's not. But I agree with you. You have to think. I all the indications that have been suggested to me from various people is that Cadwell Park probably, unfortunately, will not be on the calendar this year. And I think the same goes for places like Phillip Island. We've just heard that the Australian Motor GP has been called off. But that's another problem as well, Michael. The Australian border. I was chatting with Tom Tapares the other day. the Australian border is still closed. Nobody can get in or out, and there's very, very limited movement within the country as well. I think Victoria is pretty much the only state you can go in and out of, but they're recommending you don't. But for example, let's say Josh Brooks, for example, wouldn't actually be able to get out of Australia at the moment to come back to Europe to do his racing. So once again, that's the biggest obstacle, isn't it? The travel restrictions are going to be the biggest. They are now. We've got proof. They are the biggest problem.
Yeah. And I think Stuart, to be fair, I was speaking to Stuart myself on WhatsApp a couple of weeks ago, because he's obviously involved in Moto America as well. And we were talking, I was talking to him about, you know, which way are you going to go in? How are you going to get there? And we both concluded, actually, you know what? It doesn't matter whether you're going in as a tourist, as a fan, or whether you're going in like us as a worker with a working visa. The clear rule from the American Border Security is, we don't care whether you're a tourist, whether you are a working visa, whether you're a resident, unless you have a valid reason for coming in, you ain't coming in. Mm-hmm. And when I actually spoke to the embassy, that's one of the reasons I had to do it remotely and work in London, is the fact that you can only enter, well, if you're on an ESTA, you can't enter full stop. So that's a given. If you've got a working visa, like I've got a visa to obviously work and to present, that means nothing under these pandemic regulations. If you're a sportsman or you're a singer or you're an athlete, that means nothing. You can't get into the country.
Even celebrity Michael Brian Hill.
Yeah, even with a flash of the nashes to the beautiful people at immigration, the answer would have been no. I even spoke to the airline that I was flying with British Airways, and they said, "What are you traveling on?" And give them the details of the visa. "Oh yeah, we'd let you on the plane." And I'm like, "Oh great, I can go. Happy days." And then the woman on the phone said, "Until you arrive, at which point they'll turn you around and put you on the next plane straight back." Mm. And I'm like, "It doesn't make any sense." And she's like, "Yeah, well, we can't stop you getting on the plane because you're not traveling as a tourist. But when you get to the other end, they won't let you in, because there's a very clear rule that says, unless you're married, unless you've got kids, unless you're in the military, unless you've got a fiance or a child in that country, you ain't getting in."
Well, come on, Mike, you've got a load of options there. Go and have a child or get married. Join the army. Come on. Yeah, but no, jokes aside, it's a right mess, isn't it? It is a right mess. And I think a lot of people, ourselves included, it's been pretty depressing times, hasn't it? Let's just hope people learn something from this and that life may be a little bit better moving forward.
Yeah, and let's leave it on a really positive note. And the fact is that Moto America pulled off the first ever race behind closed doors, and it was bloody fantastic. I've enjoyed every minute of it.
Yeah, I think it's great. It's great for Moto America. And obviously, we've been making a few jokes here, but the truth is that's very, very promising now, because as we said at the top, everyone would have been watching that. And that's great hope now, isn't it, for everybody in not just motorcycle racing, not just motorsport, but sport in general.
Well, and life in general, right? The fact that we're coming out of it, that we're starting to see light at the end of the tunnel. So, you know, but as I said, don't be an idiot.
Yeah.
I'm going to be watching very, very carefully. I want to, how big is the fence? Is it 2 meters between you and your neighbor? I'll be checking that out, you know.
Don't doubt you will. It's exactly the sort of thing you would do, isn't it? But anyway, it's a bit rich coming from you telling me not to be an idiot. But there we go. On that bombshell, there's always plenty of love here, of course, on the Eurosport.
Oh, always.
Full Throttle Podcast. Don't forget, you can follow Michael, not that you'd want to, on Twitter at @mhillofficial. And honestly, Michael, thanks very much. I'm glad you've had a good weekend. And who knows when I'll actually next see you in person, but maybe sometime before Christmas.
Well, after that insult, never, mate. I'm blocking you on Twitter.
Wouldn't be the first person you blocked on Twitter today. And on that bombshell, Michael Hill, thank you very much.
Thank you, Greg. Always a pleasure, mate. Good talking to you.
Well, I've literally just finished recording the podcast there with Michael, and we've had some breaking news. So we're going to quickly go back on the line on Skype to Michael Hill. What's happened?
Well, you were taking the mick out of me saying I was a part-timer and not working, and we just finished recording and I switched my phone back on and it flashes up.
It was you who was taking the mick of me, if you don't mind.
Well, yes, it's all much of a muchness, isn't it? But joking aside, my mobile lights up like Blackpool Illuminations with some breaking news. And that is, we were obviously talking about Brandon Pasch, what a great weekend he had had. And he did have a great weekend. But the news coming from Road America tonight is that Brandon Pasch has been disqualified from race number 2 for having an underweight bike, which means he loses the 20 points from today's race. And it also means that Jason Aguilar moves up into a podium spot, his first ever podium. But Brandon Pasch, unfortunately, has been disqualified from race two.
Well, thanks to Michael for that update. Great news for Jason. Bad news, though, for Brandon. Brandon Pasch, who we know, of course, from Motorstar, as Michael said during the podcast, the final ever Motorstar champion in the BSB paddock last year. Bike underweight, disqualified from that second race. Bad luck for Brandon, but a great weekend nonetheless. Thanks again to Michael for that update at the end and for the podcast in general. That's all then for now. Many thanks from Greg Haynes. Please, as I said, subscribe if you can to Full Throttle from Eurosport. We're on Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts and other podcast platforms as well. We'll be back in the very near future with more news from World Superbikes, British Superbikes and the other racing championships on two wheels around the world. Stay safe, stay calm, don't be an idiot, as Michael Hill said. We'll speak to you very soon. Bye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.